Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joining us right now on the line, our Radio.com NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots, now in two great tropical flavors. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. That's his show now on Radio.com/home or search Home on the Radio.com app. Ross, what have you learned? Of course, Seth and I both follow you on Twitter. What have you learned about the street value of 157 pounds of weed over the last few days?
There seems to be no consensus. It's been very interesting. Some people have had it at, you know, close to $1 million. Others say it's a lot less than that because it's garbage weed from Mexico that you'd be selling wholesale. I will say this. I know that a lot of people smoke marijuana. I know it's legal in a number of states, but wow. I mean, that's about as much of a response as I've ever gotten to any tweet when I asked how much money that would be. There are a lot of people very knowledgeable about the subject, and there are a lot of people that get very defensive regarding their knowledge of the subject. Like people are coming to verbal blows in my mentions debating how much it cost. I really didn't care that much.
It's it was just a drive-by question.
There's
That's
nothing,
it.
Honestly, Ross, I've long felt this. I feel like weed would have been legalized 20 years ago if the most vocal 5% of pot smokers had just shut the hell up.
Yeah.
Because there's the most vocal and yet seemingly the most burnt out seem to get the loudest voices, and sometimes it gets annoying.
Well, hey, Seth, welcome to the world, man. Welcome to America. I mean, that's politics. That's everything where the people to the far left, the far right are by far the loudest, and that's whose voices get heard the most. And so everybody on one side of the topic thinks that everybody on the other side of the topic feels the way they do, which isn't the case. That's just the way the world is now. I'll say this. I really hope somebody gets the chance to interview Greg Robinson. You're talking about a 27-year-old guy who's made $29 million, made $6.4 million this season, the 2019 season, and 7 weeks later, he's got 157 pounds of pot in duffel bags in the back of his truck in El Paso. Like, he should have to go, his punishment, rather than jail, he should have to go to every college in the country's sociology 101 class, sit down and let the professor say, "So Greg, where did it all go wrong?" But like, tell me, like honestly, like I don't know, is it his parents, is it his upbringing, is he a bad guy, is he just not smart? Like I am fascinated by this. Pretty clearly I think his buddy probably hasn't made money and is like, "Hey, can you front the money?" It's like, "Hey Greg, buddy, you know you can just front the money without actually being the dude driving the truck, right?" Like, I mean, the whole thing's amazing.
Ross, you know how this is, though, because like you spent enough time. In the NFL, usually what happens over time is, like, no matter whatever negative stereotypes guys have about athletes, for the most part, by the time guys get to the NFL, if they can make it in the NFL, there's kind of a narrowing out. There's a screening process where the guys that just can't get along in society, for the most part, don't make it. But every now and then, there's a guy that's so physically talented and yet also so stupid. Like, to a level that doesn't have anything to do with Wonderlic or college GP or anything like that, but they've just got that spacey look in their eyes. The teammate that I had a conversation with about, well, he couldn't understand why if bleach could kill viruses, why you couldn't just drink bleach to kill the AIDS virus. That guy is the guy I'm thinking of.
I demand you tell me his name during the next break.
No, you know what? I think it is, Seth? I think it's really simple. His buddy from college hasn't made any money and wants to live the life, and peer pressure, no matter how old you are, I think peer pressure. Come on, man. You made $29 million. I just need a little help, just this one help. And Greg went along with it, my guess, gave in to try to help out his buddy, and now we see where he is.
Yeah, that's a wild story. Ross Tucker joining us on the program. Ross, you had some pretty strong takes on Joe Burrow on Twitter as well. Is Joe Burrow, for those who don't know, the highly likely number one overall pick in the draft from Southern Ohio, so there's a lot of connection that people are connecting the dots that he may want to play for the Bengals, although these tweets that he's been putting out, Ross, seem to indicate otherwise. Is he getting bad advice from people right now just in terms of how he's handling his business?
I think he is. And by the way, I am all for any player, any human being really, but any player doing whatever they think is best for their career. You only get one shot at it. So if he doesn't want to go to the Bengals because he doesn't think that they're really committed to winning Super Bowls or that that's a good place for him, I'm okay with it. I probably don't love it, but I'm okay with it. What I don't really like is sort of beating around the bush. You know, like after the game, after they won the national championship, he was like, hey, I don't care, man. They're going to draft me and pay me money to play football. I'm all in. Let's do it, which I thought was great. But then he's obviously had some people in his ear, and now it's like, Joe, do you want to be the number one pick for the Cincinnati Bengals? Well, hey, listen, they have a process. I have a process. There's a long way to go. Like, what are you talking about, bro? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't understand it. Like, I would rather him just say, heck yeah, I want to be the number one pick for the Bengals, or say, no, I really don't. I really don't think that's the best franchise for me. I don't want to play for the Bengals. If they draft me, I won't go there. But like, he's kind of beating around the bush, and it's pretty clear at this point that he doesn't really want to be there. He just won't come out and say that. I'm not a big fan of it.
How are you feeling? And this is what's been strange to me, I guess, is I think that Nolan Naraki kind of scared so many people off of being overly harsh about prospects that this year, for whatever reason, it seems like nobody's pointing out any of the negatives of Tua Tagovailoa or Joe Burrow, and almost just like laying the carpet out to where, of course, these guys are going to be awesome NFL quarterbacks. Where in previous years, there would be weirdos on TV screaming about their lack of arm strength and whatnot. Like, how confident do you feel in both those guys?
It's a really good question, Seth, and I talked to Greg Cosell from NFL Films about this yesterday on the Ross Tucker podcast, which, of course, like this show, is available on the radio.com app. And he had said the week before, and yesterday he even said, that Tua Tagovailoa, you know, there's people on TV that will talk about how he's got A-plus arm talent and how he's, you know, an elite athlete. And Greg made a great point, I thought, which is like, if he has A-plus arm talent, what does Matthew Stafford have?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have A-plus arm talent. Or if he's an elite athlete, what's Lamar Jackson or Russell Wilson? Like, what are we talking about here? He's a very good player. I thought it was interesting. Greg also said he was a little bit programmatic. And when I asked him if he liked Burrow or Tua better, he went Burrow without any hesitation whatsoever. And even Burrow, as well as he played, as good as he is, he's not like a perfect prospect, right? I mean, so let's say Burrow sat out the whole year and went back in next year's draft, and he's up against Trevor Lawrence. Well, you know, it depends on the year that Trevor Lawrence has, but Trevor Lawrence is bigger, faster, stronger arm. I mean, so if Trevor Lawrence has a really good year, he's literally better in all of like the physical measurable categories than Burrow, which tells you that Burrow is a heck of a player, but he's not like an elite talent, elite natural ability.
Yeah, I guess, Ross, the way I would look at it is the success of both of these guys came with some very specific conditions. It was very conditional success. Joe Burrow became successful once they brought in Joe Brady to re-architect that offense at LSU. He was not very good before that. And Tua's success largely came in games against Lambs in the SEC and FCS schools, because when he played against more elite competition, he wasn't as good. For most of his career, he's throwing into gigantic windows behind an already ready-made offensive line. Both of their success was very... success is always conditional to some degree, but to me, for guys who were talking about teams making the ultimate investment in being the face of a franchise, really, really conditional for both of these guys. Would you agree?
Yeah, they both also not only had excellent offensive lines, they both had three or four total freak show wide receivers. You know what I mean? I mean, they're throwing slants, and that number one for LSU is out of this world. I forget his name. Obviously, Judy and Ruggs and Smith and all the guys for Alabama, Jefferson for LSU. Like, these guys had about as good of a receiving core as you can possibly have at the college level as well. You know, that's what I think is most interesting, is they didn't appear to face that much adversity this year.
Yeah.
Obviously, other than Tua's health. And their talent of their team was better than everybody they went up against. I'll be very curious to see how they do in the NFL when that's not the case and they're not clearly better than pretty much all of their opponents.
Speaking with Ross Tucker, you can follow him on Twitter at Ross Tucker NFL. Ross, when does this CBA get passed?
You know, I think and hope today. You know, the players are going to vote on it. There have been some guys that have been vocal against it. I got to tell you guys, I can't stand this topic from a social media perspective, because I see all, like, CBA Twitter makes football or draft Twitter look like geniuses. I mean, CBA Twitter is a bunch of people that apparently have never been in a negotiation in their life and have nothing to lose, that just sit here and say, players are getting robbed. Players are getting robbed, man. They need to just sit out. Well, like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, get a clue. I personally find it very insulting to Eric Winston and all the guys that have been negotiating for 10 months on this, to just sit here and just dismiss where they're at. And by the way, like, I saw Darren Revelle, right, said that it's like the worst CBA he's ever seen. And I literally tweeted at Darren Revelle this morning, at Ross Tucker NFL, and said, Darren, what the hell are you talking about? It's better in every single category than the one they signed in 2011. Literally, go through it line item by line item. They were getting 47%. Now they'll get 48.5%. The minimum was 89% spending, four-year windows. Now it's 90% minimum, three-year windows, which means they have to do it in those. I mean, you literally, they only have 16 padded practices the whole year. I mean, you go through it, it's better in every category. So I'm not saying they should sign it or not. I'm not saying it's a great deal or whatever. But, like, all these people that are bashing them, what are you talking about? Like, if you want to bash somebody, bash the guys that agreed to the one in 2011, because anyone that's ever actually been in a negotiation knows that then becomes the starting point. So it's not easy to get all the gains that they've gotten. And what have they really given up or given the owners? Two more playoff games and one more game in the regular season. Like, people don't realize the primary reason they'll benefit from that is the television money.
Yeah.
The players get 55% of the TV money. They benefit from that more than the owners. Like the amount of people that spout off on Twitter, it's kind of like why I don't ever tweet anything about politics, because I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. So I'm not going to. But the people, nobody got the memo on the CBA. Everybody, and by the way, I know this is going to get everybody mad at me, because everybody loves J.J. Watt, and I love J.J. Watt. And everybody already in Houston gets mad at me because they think I'm anti-Houston. I'm not at all. Love Deshaun Watson. Love Hopkins. Love J.J. Watt. I thought J.J.'s tweet was disappointing, Because I don't know, Seth, is he a union rep?
He's, you know what, I was trying to confirm, I wanted to say John Weeks, a long snapper, is, but the NFLPA's website, and Ross, this is not a good look for the NFLPA, currently lists Houston's rep is Brian Cushing, Buffalo's rep is Tyrod Taylor. That's right, I said Tyrod, not Tyrod, because he hadn't yet changed it back when he was in Buffalo.
Right.
So, but it's unless something changed, I don't think it's J.J. Watt, but I got to confirm that.
Yeah, so for me, what's disappointing about that is, number one, I think it's disrespectful to the guys that have been negotiating for 10 months. There's no context with it. He just says hard no without saying why. And by the way, what happens is, because he's such a good player and he's so popular, people believe, like, oh, well, J.J. Watt doesn't like it, so I shouldn't like it. He's made over $85 million. Like, he is one of 50 guys, not one of the other 1,800, who are trying to do whatever they can to maximize the financial security they can get at the start of their lives for their families based on putting their bodies through significant harm. And I just really, really thought that was a – look, J.J.'s absolutely entitled to his opinion. I thought it was a poor forum and a poor way to express whatever he doesn't like about it, because most people won't understand that he is not even close to representative of the union at whole.
Well, that is a great point. We'll finish it up on that. Ross Tucker, our radio.com sports NFL insider. Insider calls brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots, now in two great tropical flavors. Catch Ross every weekday on Home and Home. His show out now on radio.com/home or search Home on the radio.com app. Ross, we appreciate it. Have a good show, my friend.
See you guys.
All right.
And it's Brennan Scarlett, actually. Now.
Okay.
So, and is the Texans player rep.
Boy, that might have been the point Ross just made there at the end about J.J. Watt. We've done a lot of hits with Ross Tucker throughout the football season.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been his strongest take that he's had when he's been on with us. And I've enjoyed our conversations with Ross. That point that he made is with respect to J.J.'s tweet is exactly, in terms of the brevity of it, is what I was thinking driving in this morning, which was, if you're going to do that, you've got to be a little more specific than just saying hard no, because he's right. It creates a perception. SportsCenter, when it went on the air at 6 o'clock today, one of the first things they're showing is J.J. Watt sacking somebody. They're not showing him sacking somebody. I'm assuming we don't have the sound on in here because we're doing a radio show. I'm assuming they're not talking about J.J. Watt, the football player. They're talking about J.J. Watt, the tweeter. And the point that Ross made about what I'll call the proletariat of the league, the middle class and lower class of the league, this is a CBA that's bumping up income that is material to – those guys are going to make $100,000 more a year, which is a drop in the bucket for players like J.J. Watt. It's significant for guys who are in the year for 2 or 3 years at the most.
Yep, and usually what will happen is teams will get together and they'll vote on topics, and but generally they follow the lead of the leadership on the team. And I was never there as part of a vote of a CBA, at least not when I was an older player.
It was labor peace when you were.
But you asked earlier, okay, what's it mean when JJ tweets something like this? I don't know how it affects the entire league overall. When it comes to the guys standing up and talking in a meeting room and telling guys which way they should vote, it means a lot, you know. So I would imagine if I were JJ and a lot of other players, including the rank and file, it's going to be all about this 17th game. Even if you're a player who's okay with adding the 17th game, it can't be as simple as, hey, don't worry, we'll take care of you down the road. And it gets kind of complex, all the things they have built in with all of this. But there's just, it's hard to negotiate when you don't know exactly how the new extra game, the new playoff format, and the new TV deal are going to affect the top line. You know, so you're trying to kind of take care of the bottom line. And guys are going to be negotiating deals over the next year or two before a lot of this stuff kicks in. And I think that's where some of the uncertainty comes.
So Brennan Scarlett is the player rep for the Texans. And to approve this CBA, there are obviously 32 player reps, one for each team. Two-thirds of them need to vote yes on it to approve it and then put it to a vote of the entire constituency of players, you know, like an election, the popular vote, if you will. To get this approved, you need two-thirds of the player reps to vote yes, and then they just need a simple majority of the overall players to vote yes on it. What is Brennan Scarlett doing right? Is Brennan Scarlett taking the temperature of his Texans teammates right now to decide how he votes? Is he voting based on what he thinks of it? In other words, does JJ's tweet have any influence on what Brennan Scarlett is doing?
I would imagine he would talk to JJ. And I mean, each guy handles it the way he's going to handle it, but I would imagine he's probably calling around, talking to people on the team, how they feel about it.
It's got to be a weird time of year because these guys aren't together.
Right.
This is not a CBA. This is not a vote that's being taken during week 11 of the regular season.
And it's hard, too, because the player reps simply know a lot more than everybody else. And it's hard to communicate all the information that when those guys get together for their three-day meetings and whatnot, they're obviously going over a lot of finer details. Then all of a sudden you show up to the – then all of a sudden sometimes you just feel bad for the player reps because – they think hard about this, and they're usually the brighter guys on the team. A lot of times they're special teams players because they have time on their hands. And then they, all of a sudden, they show up, and some guy in the back row is like, hold on a minute, looky here. I ain't doing nothing for nobody. So they're giving a certain amount of autonomy. Now, this is another, this is where it's interesting that the owners want to get this passed right now. And it's not like the owners all got together and all of a sudden just sprung this on the league. Like Ross said, they've been talking to the NFLPA a lot. They've been having multiple meetings. It's been much less contentious, maybe, than it had been last time around. Mm-hmm. It seems like both sides are trying to work together towards a common goal. But when it comes to the whole league voting on it, I would not be comfortable without being able to have a meeting with everybody in one room together. And they're not going to have that opportunity until mini camps or OTAs get started up here in about a month or so.
It's an inconvenient time of year for the – it's easy enough for the owners to – the owners got 32 guys on planes and met in New York yesterday.
Yeah, they get in their private jets and they go.
It's a difference between owning a couple dogs and trying to herd cattle. You know what I'm saying? Like the you know, with the players versus the owners, just logistically trying to get the temperature of the overall constituency. And JJ has now had two strong takes in the last 3 days. He wants DJ Reader to get a new deal. He tweeted that, and he does not like the CBA. I am still waiting for him to support his good friend Jose Altuve and back up Carlos Correa's contention that Jose Altuve did not cheat. You're on the clock, JJ. Payne and Pendergast need support for Jose Altuve. We are Altuve land.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.